Now a question for you. Who among us hasn't lost sleep or lost time or maybe even friends or jobs because of social media? We pretty much accept that as normal, but a woman in Connecticut has lost far more, and she is refusing to suffer in silence. Last July, her 11-year-old daughter, Selena Rodriguez, took her own life, having, quote, struggled for more than 2 years with an extreme addiction to Instagram and Snapchat. Those words are from a lawsuit filed days ago by her mother, Tammy Rodriguez, in federal court. It alleges that those social media platforms, again, and I'll quote, intentionally created an attractive nuisance to young children, but failed to provide adequate safeguards from the harmful effects they knew were occurring. In Selena's case, those harmful effects included sleep deprivation, multiple absences from school, and being subjected to sexually exploitive content and acts by adult male users. I'm joined now by one of the lead attorneys in the case, Matthew Bergman. He is also founder of the Social Media Victims Law Center and a professor at Lewis and Clark Law School. I'm also pleased to welcome Lynn Nyshes. She's a school psychologist and licensed professional counselor. And before we start our discussion, you should know that we did reach out to Meta, that is Instagram's parent company, also reached out to Snap, but neither decided to give us a comment, but did give CBS News a comment, and I'll quote that one. While we can't comment on the specifics of active litigation, nothing is more important to us than the well-being of our community. In fact, Snapchat helps people communicate with their real friends and intentionally makes it hard for strangers to contact people. Lynn, I'm going to begin with you, and I'm going to begin with you with some of what Matthew has in the lawsuit, if I can. There's two statistics that are stated in Matthew's lawsuit where he's representing this poor woman. Between 2007 and 2018, that's 11 years, suicide rates among 12 to 16-year-olds in the United States rose 146%. And then we've also discussed this next statistic on this program. A Pew Research poll found 45% of high school students said they use social media daily, some sort of platform daily, and 24% said that they were online almost constantly. So Lynn, is what Mr. Bergman says in these two statistics cause and effect?
Well, I do think that's a difficult question to answer for sure, but I do think as well that social media is a factor in these rising incidents of suicidal ideation. As a matter of fact, you probably know, even in the times between 2019 and 2021, there was like a 50% increase in visits to the emergency room for suicidal ideation or suicidal attempts. And so it's very disturbing. And when I heard that statistic from the CDC last summer, I will say that the first thing that I thought was that how is social media playing a role in this? There certainly are other factors, but I do think that it does have a role.
So, Matthew Bergman, let me ask you this. What do you hope, or at least what does your client, Tammy Rodriguez, hope to gain from this lawsuit?
She hopes that by prosecuting this case, the social media companies will design safer products and families won't have to go through what her family has gone through. These are everything that happened was preventable. And these products are specifically designed to addict teenagers. Their profit model is directly based on how many hours they can keep teenagers online. And that is a direct cause of many forms of severe mental health crises among youth that the Surgeon General just last month issued an advisory on.
So, Lynn, Matthew's wording in the lawsuit mentions addictive actually 27 times, that word addictive 27 times. And this is your, you know, this is your wheelhouse, what you do for a living. Is social media clinically addictive?
Well, it's not a diagnosable condition, social media addiction, at least not at this point. I mean, that has been bantered around by the different professional organizations. But I will tell you that in preparing for this interview, I did speak to some young people and asked them what they thought some of the benefits and detractors of social media were. And they all mentioned that it's addicting. And so that's just kids talking to me informally. So I do think that it's been proven that dopamine is released when people get likes and get notifications through social media. And so there could be some addictive process for some people.
So, Matthew, that brings to light, there's this thing that a lot of lawyers and obviously people like Lynn know about. It's called the DSM. And I think the last one I remember quoting was the 5. Has it been updated since then? Okay. So it's a updated, big book. It's being updated. Okay. It's a big book, and it really puts into language for lawyers, et cetera, these kinds of diagnoses. And, you know, it's really boilerplate stuff. You can lift it from the DSM and you can put it into a lawsuit. So, Matthew, if the new updated version of the DSMV actually does include clinical addiction, are we now starting to talk about what tobacco went through and that kind of lawsuit? And those would sound almost
I think it's very similar to tobacco, because just as tobacco companies manipulated nicotine levels to hook their customers, social media platforms using very sophisticated algorithms, using very sophisticated social psychology, have designed a product that is that addicts people, that people can't go away with it. And you're absolutely right. With the dopamine response when you get a like on cocaine neurologically when you get a like on Instagram or Facebook is neurologically similar to the dopamine response when one gets a snort of cocaine. And DSM-5 is including online gaming as an addictive disorder. And if you look at the criteria on DSM-5 for online gaming disorder, it matches exactly some of the symptoms that we see. And in talking to parents, we have kids that are so addicted to this product that if the phone is taken away, they get violent, or they'll run away and use other people's phones. They will call CPS if their parents take their phones away. And all of this doesn't have to happen. I mean, there are a lot of good things that social media can do for kids, but it's the algorithms that make it bad. I mean, simply providing a resource for kids can be a good thing, a very good thing. I mean, think about an LGBT child in a small community. A social media can give that child the support that they need that they're not getting in their community. Or think about a kid in the Bronx that's interested in fly fishing. Again, there are very good things that can happen. But the problem is the algorithms are not designed to help people. They're designed to hook people. And in many, many cases, we see very, very deleterious results. Suicide, attempted suicide, eating disorders, anxiety, depression, and self-harm. This is an epidemic that's going on, and it's entirely preventable simply by making the product safer.
So there was a congressional hearing last fall, and I want to play one of the witnesses. Her name was Frances Haugen. She was a Facebook whistleblower, and it was kind of, earth-shattering when this all played out on the news. But I want to play her soundbite one more time, because I think it fits into what we're talking about, like, to a T. So take a look.
But I'm here today because I believe Facebook's products harm children, stoke division, and weaken our democracy. The company's leadership knows how to make Facebook and Instagram safer, but won't make the necessary changes because they have put their astronomical profits before people.
Mr. Bergman, is she going to be a witness in your lawsuit?
Absolutely, and she's absolutely right. There are simple fixes that would make these products so much safer. You could age verify to ensure that the person who says they're a 12-year-old girl on Instagram isn't a 57-year-old pervert grooming a child to give naked photos of themselves. You could warn parents about the dangerous nature of the products. You could turn the products off after 2.5 hours. I mean, one of the key factors in suicidality is sleep deprivation. And we have children that we represent percent that their parents say they're up 3, 4, 5 in the morning using this. You could just turn the thing off at night. There's so many things that could be done. But
that's
but
what Tammy Rodriguez said about her daughter, Selena, 11 years old, before she took her own life. I have to leave it there, but I certainly want you back. I want to follow this and see, you know, what the progression is of this particular case. So Matthew Bergman and Lynn Nicias, thank you both. Appreciate it.
Thank you for taking this important issue up.
Thank you. I'm going to switch gears for a minute here. I'm going to take you to a place called Auburndale, Florida. It's nestled between Tampa and Orlando in the heart of the Florida's Lake region. Of about 16,000 people who live there, a lot of them fish. And Christopher Cordell and Trey Pitts are two of the people who love to fish. So on Monday afternoon, those two young guys, they set off for the banks of Lake Stella to toss in a line. And that's when they noticed something odd. Floating out in the middle of the lake. It would take a really, really big cast to get the hook all the way out there, and then it took a lot of reeling to bring that thing in close and up to shore. But that's when they realized what it was that they had actually hooked. It was the body of a dead man. So they immediately called Trey's dad, who immediately raced to the lake shore, and when he got there to the boys, he called 911. All three of them are here with me tonight to tell me about what happened next. We've also got the latest from the police investigation as to who it was on the end of that fishing line. That's next. Welcome back. Before the break, I shared the story of two young men who reeled in a dead body while fishing at a Florida lake. Christopher Cordell and his friend Trey Pitts are here with me, along with Trey's dad in the middle. That's Brian Pitts, who came to their rescue. Thank you, all three of you, for joining me tonight. Christopher, let me begin with you, because as I understand it, you had the fishing rod. I'm just curious about what went through your mind when you realized what it was you had reeled in.
Well, I was very shocked. Mind blown in a way, because it was the last thing I'd ever imagined to reel in would be a dead body. So it's kind of nerve taking in many ways.
I can imagine. Trey, did you realize at the same time, what it was, and was there anything specific that stood out to you that made you realize what that mass was that you were pulling towards you?
Yeah, so at first we really didn't know what it was, and I was there by myself before Chris ever arrived, and we was sitting down there, and yet the day before this happened, we seen a pair of shoes sitting down there just up against the water. And we thought it was kind of weird. So the next day I came back by myself about 10 o'clock. And I realized there was something floating by the fountain. So I sat there. I was like, maybe it'll float in about like 2 hours or so. And I caught a fish. And then I hit Chris up and was like, hey, I caught something. You want to come down here? Maybe we can catch some more. And so we walked down there. By that time, it was about halfway across the lake. And we were like, maybe it's a mannequin, maybe a big piece of driftwood. And we were like, let's let it float in a little bit more to where we can actually reach it and hook into it. And so once we hooked into it and got it about 10 feet away from us, that's when we realized it was a body. And it was just nerve-wracking.
I can only imagine, you know. And Brian, that's your boy, you know. He called you.
Yeah.
You hear? I just can't imagine what you heard on the other side of that phone line.
Yeah, they were pretty nervous. At first I was like, "You got to be kidding!" They were pretty adamant that they weren't joking. So that's when I got down there. We live real close to it. They walk down there all the time, and there's a school. It's a real small town. It's really beautiful, actually. Everybody kind of like walks around this for exercise and rollerblading and things of that nature. So for that to to be the phone call based upon where they was, that was, I didn't believe it either at first. So I get down there and sure enough, what we, you know, what they said it was is what it was. I mean, you could see the guy's tattoos and things of that nature. So that's, as soon as I seen it, that's when I called the police and got them down there. So, yeah.
Probably not a moment too soon. Christopher, tell me what happened when the police arrived. Like, explain everything that happened after that. Because right up until then, it was the three of you. And then I can imagine all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, so when the cops showed up, they ended up separating us three. And they got all of our stories. And then we ended up having to wait around so we can actually get the rest of our fishing gear. They were willing to give it back, but just not right then when we were wanting it to. But
Brian, have you heard anything other than the official report? And I'll just let you know what the details came out in the press release. It's a 40-year-old white male, a local resident, had recently returned to the area, likely in the water for 24 to 48 hours. No obvious signs of trauma. Autopsy pending, and they're not releasing the name of the deceased until the next of kin. Have you heard anything else above and beyond that, like foul play or an identity yet?
Yeah, there's speculation of identity. I had some friends reach out to me that, believe that one of their friends was a family member. So I instructed them to go ahead and go down to Arvidell Police Department and, you know, identify their self and try to, you know, get that whole ball rolling. Yeah, he was around 40 years old, about 5'8", 5'9". Yeah, that's about all that we really know. We know it's in the medical examiner's hand on, you know, what went down with him. Yeah. It was weird that, you know, there was no clothes on the bank, but he didn't have any clothes, but his like boxers and socks on. So the shoes that my son was talking about on the bank that he seen the day before and that day, we're guessing that those belonged to him. They were brand new Nike shoes. The whites on the shoes were brand new. There weren't even creases in the shoes. They were like new shoes. So to be sitting by themselves right there on the bank was kind of telltale signs that they might belong to him. But then, you know, we were curious, well, where's the rest of his clothes? Did he just walk down there in shoes and boxers? At this point, we don't know who's being speculated is it, that it is. I don't know the person. So
better not to anyway.
If the names match up with what, you know, we're hearing,
and
I didn't know the person personally, but.
Yeah, we're gonna watch the police report as well. We're gonna follow the story to just, you know, just to find out if this was just someone who took his own life or if this was something more nefarious. But Brian, thank you for that. Christopher and Trey, thanks for sharing your story.
Absolutely.
And I'm wishing you guys well, because that's a really traumatic thing you guys have been through. So thank you for telling us. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Y'all have a great night.
Y'all too. And I will keep you guys posted out there on what they determine is the resolution to that very mysterious little detail there about the clothes. So we'll keep following it. Minus 50. Minus 50. It's a thing. And it is likely going to paralyze a few places around the country this weekend. What you need to know about the dropping temperatures and the dropping iguanas. Is a real warning. Falling iguanas possible tonight. We will explain. Oh, man. Those videos, Nate, every time I see them, I get worried that the iguanas are dying. They're not, right? They're not dropping dead. And you can give me the visual aid and explain what's happening with them.
Well, they're not dying. I mean, what's happening is that it's becoming so cold that they can't function and they lose their grip pretty much out of the trees and they'll just fall. And, I mean, if they come back, they will come back if it warms up, unless it stays colder than 40 degrees for 3 days. But unless they fall on their head or something out of the tree. But this little guy, they're already preparing. So it hasn't taken them long to realize that the cold front's coming, and they're already they're in the water itself trying to stay warm. So they sense that the cold is coming, and we caught this guy sitting in the water waiting for it to come.
It's amazing. So, like, generally speaking, if you were going to walk up to an iguana on a nice, warm, sunny day, it would go flying off. But they're kind of in a little catatonic state. You could walk right up to them and pick them up.
Oh, yeah, they'll fall out of the tree. They look dead. I mean, you know, they look dead. They'll sit there for a couple of days. And, you know, eventually if it warms up, or you could pour a hose on them and it warm them up quicker. But, yeah, it takes them a while. But, you know, recently we have been in, you know, had so many warm winters that, you know, they've just the population has exploded down here.
Yeah, so, I think a lot of people would say, gosh, that doesn't look natural. There's a reason it doesn't look natural, because they're not naturally from those parts.
Yeah, I mean, but they're, like I said, they're adapted quick. This guy's cold right now. You can tell he's dark colored. Normally it'd be a lot brighter green, but he's cold. And, you know, that's why he's, you know, darker.
But, Nate Fisher, I love that you brought the visual aid for the interview. And I also just love
trees,
learning about
watch
that.
Out for them.
Right, that you have to watch out for falling iguanas in Florida. But if you're down in Florida,
you literally
be
do.
Careful, because it happens. Yeah. Nate, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Be careful out there. All right. Royal family bracing for the Queen's decision. Who will be the new Princess of Wales? And will she measure up to Diana? And heavens, what will Camilla say? That's next. Welcome back, everybody. This should be a joyous year for Queen Elizabeth II. It is her Platinum Jubilee, 70th anniversary of ascending to the throne. And while parties and parades are certainly on deck, really all is not well in the House of Windsor. There was last year's death of her husband, Prince Philip, the ongoing legal problems of her son, Prince Andrew, and the allegations of racism in the royal household by her grandson, Harry. Nonetheless, the Queen is reportedly looking to the future, specifically Kate Middleton and her future. Royal sources tell the British press that when Prince Charles becomes king and Prince William is bumped up to Prince of Wales, his wife Kate Middleton could be given the title of Princess of Wales. And that might seem like a no-brainer, but it is a bit of a touchy subject. William's mother, of course, is Diana, as in Princess Diana, as in Princess of Wales. And she still casts a huge shadow over the palace. So will the public be okay with Kate taking over Diana's tiara? I want to bring in our expert royal commentator, Hilary Fordwich. I think that's the question on everyone's mind. I get it. It's a technical title. You become Princess of Wales. But how are people going to digest it?
Well, pleasure to be back with you again, Ashley. And I would say that she's immensely popular. The Duchess of Cambridge, Kate Middleton, has really... actually, by the British public's standards, she's actually never put a foot wrong. Currently, Camilla, of course, holds the title formally, but she never uses it. And that's because, of course, she's still rather a controversial figure. But Kate Middleton is always at the top of polls. She's viewed very popularly, always popular. And I think that she will be taking that on, and it will have no controversy whatsoever. Actually, interestingly enough, when you just mentioned Prince Andrew and all the issues, or now Andrew, the private citizen, he actually had to step back from the Grenadier Guards, and they are purported to want to have Kate Middleton actually take on that role as well. So she's very popular across the board, even with the military.
Oh, okay. So there's always that issue. It's kind of thorny with Harry. There was all that reporting that Harry and Meghan didn't get along with Kate. And if Kate gets the title that Harry's mother held, how would Harry feel about that?
Well, you know, being a second son isn't easy. And of course, he was raised at one juncture. Of course, he was second in line to the throne after his brother. But it's always called in the UK an heir and a spare. And actually, that, of course, isn't anything that is really welcome, because he's always been the spare. And no, it's nothing that he would really want, because, of course, now he is really redundant, because he is now relegated to behind all of Prince William's children. So he has now fallen back in the ranking. He's no longer the spare. He's far back behind. And so, no, that's nothing that is very popular with him. at all.
It's going to be strange to hear anybody else referred to as the Princess of Wales. And I love that little factoid you threw in there that Camilla really is the Princess of Wales, but it's all hush-hush and no
Correct.
One speaks very much of it. Hillary Fordwich, always good to have you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, pleasure.
Okay, so all of this is a pretty nice distraction, actually, from some uglier royal news on this side of the pond. Prince Andrew making headlines again by requesting a jury trial in his civil suit with Virginia Giuffre. She is, of course, the woman who has accused him of sexually abusing her, along with Jeffrey Epstein, when she was 17. Andrew has denied all of the allegations, but earlier this month, his mom and his boss and the Queen, she stripped him of all of his royal titles, forcing him to face the court as a private citizen. And that brings us to an interesting trivia question. If the Queen is the highest ranking woman in England, who is the second highest ranking woman in England? This is trickier than you might think. The answer's after the break. Before the break, I asked you this trivia question. If the Queen is the highest ranking woman in England, who is the second highest ranking? And the answer is Prince Charles' wife, Camilla Parker Bowles. But only when she's with him. Okay, this is what bothers me. When Camilla is somewhere else without him, she drops to number 4 on the list, behind the Queen's daughter, Princess Anne, and 2 granddaughters of previous monarchs. Interestingly, Prince Andrew's 2 daughters are just behind Camilla at numbers 5 and 6. Thanks for being with us, everyone. See you tomorrow.